The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots going on here at the Ed Stone campus. The children have been working all week getting ready for a dance production that their school in Birmingham has this evening. So quite a few of us will be venturing off to Birmingham later tonight to see that show. And as I understand it, the dancers in Edmond as well have a recital planned for this Sunday in Armstrong Auditorium, I presume. So lots going on for the young people, lots of good activities to keep them busy and active, and of course to make it fun for family and friends. Well, today is an important show. I've been talking about just some of the information we've been compiling on targeting journalists or going after First Amendment rights. A lot of journalists are saying that today about President Trump. And it's important to get the record straight. It's astonishing, really, to think about just how the history can be revised in some cases just in a few short months. God says, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil. I mean, it's just upside down. And you're seeing it in the way that these stories are covered as well. The press, the media, they're deceiving you in so many ways. You can't get the truth. If you just flip on the TV or go to your favorite news site, more often than not, they're going to, like I covered yesterday with that story about the so-called UK austerity. Richard Palmer sent me another link. They were building in Prescott. They were building up some big production. I forget what it was. But he said he didn't notice it until after the show yesterday. Just a totally a bogus story, if ever there was one, in the New York Times. When so many other topics could have been discussed. You really have to do a little bit of digging to get to the truth. Now, thankfully, you've got thetrumpet.com and the magazine, and we've gotten some really nice feedback, by the way. One email I'm thinking of in particular just came in yesterday or today. An individual that's just thankful for the truth in a world full of lies. Jesus said that the devil is the father of lies and that there's no truth in him. There's no truth in the devil. I mean, even just to take the devil as the prime example, even if he says something that's factually accurate, I mean, he quoted scripture in the Titanic battle with Jesus Christ in Matthew 4. He quoted from scripture, so he got some of the words right. But he took it out of context. He misquoted it. He twisted it. He perverted it. And that's what we see with so much of the news coverage today. There's no absolute truth. There's each individual's truth, quote unquote. You back up in that same passage, John 8:44, where it talks about the father of lies. In verse 31, it says, Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, if you continue in my word, then are you my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. I mean, the truth sets us free, but you have to know it. You have to know the truth. You have to understand the truth first, and then it will set you free. It'll sanctify you, as it says over in John 17. It's got to flow out from God's word. That's the foundation. That's the bedrock. Now, when you look at the media coverage of this presidency, and this is just one, what we're going to talk about today is just one example, but here they are, so many of them, on the left and even the right. They're convinced that Donald Trump is coming after them, that Donald Trump poses a grave danger to their First Amendment rights, freedom of the press. I mean, that was the big takeaway from this year's White House Correspondents' Dinner a few weeks ago. I mean, it got news as well because of the crass comedians at that event. But one after another, of course, President Trump wasn't there, but they're just piling it on him. He's attacking us. He's aggressively going after our First Amendment rights. Because what? Because of a tweet? Because of what action has he taken? Well, let's just play you a montage quickly here of some of the statements, the alarmists in the media talking about the danger that President Trump poses. Clip one.
The president's been very successful in his efforts to discredit the media, without question. And of course, it's dangerous.
But this administration doesn't appear to just discredit the media. They're also blocking the media's access to information.
Donald Trump has added to that. His statements certainly create an atmosphere in which leaders believe they can do what they want to the press and not face consequences.
Yes, we are under fire. We are under attack. He's put targets on our backs.
Trump's attacks on the American press as enemies of the American people are more treacherous than Richard Nixon's attacks on the press.
President Trump is engaged in the most direct, sustained assault on a free press in our history.
Everyone, Republicans and people around the country, should look at this not as some inside baseball thing, but as a fundamental principle of our democracy being violated.
He called us the dishonest media, the disgusting media.
Well, this has really taken the assault on the rule of law to a new level.
He called us liars, thieves, scum, criminals.
President Trump has not observed the time-honored norm that's been in place.
Journalism advocates said Donald Trump would be a threat to press freedom. That's why today there is palpable fear among many journalists that a Trump presidency will be restrictive, litigious, and downright dangerous for the Fourth Estate.
But when you reflexively refer to the press as the enemy of the people or fake news, that has real damage.
Wow. Dangerous, palpable fear. look at how they're panicking. They're all targets. They see themselves as targets. They're being blocked from being able to do their job. And anybody that would criticize them, like the president has done, I mean, he has done that. There's no getting around that. But he's creating an atmosphere. An atmosphere in which people can now go after the press, and if they do, there's not going to be any consequences. We are in grave danger. But ask yourself, besides the angry tweets, besides the contentious press conferences, what has this president actually done to persecute the media? In what are his actions in going after the media and their First Amendment rights? And furthermore, how does it compare to his predecessor, Barack Obama? President Obama was also quite critical of the media. He didn't do it in the way that President Trump does, and his criticisms of the media, they didn't get near as much attention from the major media. Most of the criticism, of course, was aimed at the conservative media. But beyond criticism, the Obama administration left an 8-year track record of targeting journalists, spying on reporters, coming down hard on whistleblowers, prosecuting leakers, sending them to jail, sending them to prison. And what we've compiled here are a number of examples that show this. These are actions. Forget about President Trump's words for a moment. Consider the actions of his predecessor. Look at the case of James Risen. He's the investigative reporter. I assume he's still with the New York Times. He either is or was the investigative reporter with the New York Times. And going back to the 1990s, he has lots of contacts in what we would call the deep state today, the CIA and the DOJ, the Pentagon and such. And if you go back even before President Obama came along, I mean, there were a number of cases, particularly during the Bush administration following 9/11, where President Bush requested, asked the New York Times, don't print this. This is a danger to national security. And in some cases, the New York Times would comply with that. In any event, Risen comes out with his book. I forget when the book was produced. And the Bush administration went after him because he had these sources at the State Department, at the CIA. And so the Bush administration went after them, or him rather. And Risen thought that, well, once Obama gets in there, I mean, he's talking about all of this transparency and freedom. Once Obama gets in there, then surely they'll drop this case and let me continue with my investigative reporting. But Obama picked up where Bush left off. And I mean, he tightened the screws on Risen. This was just one of a number of high-profile examples of Barack Obama using the little-used Espionage Act of 1917, a 100-year-old act, to justify his prosecution of reporters, going after reporters and their sources. They're confidential sources, or some would say leakers. And that's what was at the heart of this investigation, or rather this litigation. The Obama Justice Department, they demanded that James Risen reveal his sources, the sources for the information that he wrote about in his book. Classified information, they said. We've got it. We demand to know who it is because we're going to go after them. And Risen refused to tell them. He refused to reveal his sources. He said, this was in an interview with the Intercept earlier this year. He said, my case was part of a broader crackdown of reporters and whistleblowers that had begun during the presidency of George W. Bush and continued far more aggressively under the Obama administration, which had already prosecuted more leak cases than all previous administrations combined. Did you hear this? The Obama administration did this. Prosecuted more leak cases. I mean, while he was in charge, they were very much against leaks. They were very much concerned about keeping secrecy. Obama officials, it says, seem, this is quoting Risen, this is a New York Times reporter. He said earlier this year, Obama officials seem determined to use criminal leak investigations to limit reporting on national security. And so they were back and forth in the District Court, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. It was a split decision at the Fourth Circuit, basically ruling against Risen. I guess that would be 2-1 in our case at the Ninth Circuit. There were three judges. In any event, it's a split decision, so it's kicked up to the Supreme Court. And in 2014, the Supreme Court refused to hear the appeal, which basically, it basically let the appellate court decision stand. Which means that Risen either had to come forward and reveal his sources or go to prison. That all came to a head right toward the end of the Obama administration. For 7 years, the Obama Justice Department went after this journalist to try to find out who his sources were so that they could then go after those sources. Now, as I say, Risen thought, well, once Obama comes in, surely they'll drop this case. He says in this article that he was surprised. He was surprised that they renewed it and that they went at it more aggressively. It says, finally, in hindsight, this was one of the earliest signals that Obama was determined to extend and even expand many of Bush's national security policies, including a crackdown on whistleblowers and the press. Ignoring the possible consequences to American democracy, the Obama administration began aggressively conducting surveillance of the digital communications of journalists and potential sources, leading to more leaked prosecutions than all previous administrations combined. This is Risen over and again pointing out that, look, this was the worst administration in history. As far as clamping down on press privileges is concerned. Listen to this quote, or this clip rather. This is clip four. It's from an interview Risen had in 2014. Clip four.
James, you have called the Obama administration the biggest threat to freedom of the press in a generation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that their record speaks for itself. They've prosecuted more whistleblowers and targeted more journalists than any other administration, than all previous administrations combined.
That's James Risen in 2014. New York Times reporter. Biggest threat to the freedom of the press in a generation, the interviewer asks. And he says, yeah, look at the record. Look at the actions. Look at what they've been doing. Look at how they're prosecuting journalists and whistleblowers. They're targeting the media. And they're doing it in a way, and they're doing it with the frequency that you haven't seen in all the other administrations combined. That's astonishing. It should be. I mean, if we're concerned about freedom of the press, let's get to root causes here. This is Risen in that article. He said, I believe my willingness to fight the government for 7 years may make prosecutors less eager to force other reporters to testify about their sources. At the same time, though, the Obama administration used my case to destroy the legal underpinnings of the reporter's privilege in the Fourth Circuit. Remember that ruling went against him. And the only reason he didn't go off to prison was because right at the end, Obama thought, well, rather than send a New York Times reporter off to prison, if he's not going to reveal the information of who these leakers are, instead of sending a New York Times reporter to prison, then right here at the last bit of our administration, we'll go ahead and drop the charges. But in so doing, I mean, as Risen brings out here, the ruling at the Fourth Circuit still stands today. And he says here, which means that if the government does decide to go after more reporters, those reporters will have fewer legal protections in Virginia and Maryland, home to the Pentagon, the CIA, and the NSA, and thus the jurisdiction where many national security leak investigations will be conducted. And then he goes on to say, that's going to make it easier. This is, again, an interview from earlier this year. That's going to make it easier for Donald Trump and the presidents who come after him to conduct an even more draconian assault on press freedom in the United States. Now, President Trump hasn't done any of this yet. Where's the evidence? Where's the actions that he's taken, aside from an angry tweet or a back and forth at a press conference? Where are the prosecutions? Where is he going after whistleblowers and leakers? Yes, he says James Comey's a leaker. But James Comey's on a book tour. James Risen gets to root causes here. He wrote a piece at the New York Times, by the way, right at the end of Obama's presidency, December 30th, 2016. The title is, If Donald Trump Targets Journalists, Thank Obama. If he goes after journalists, you can thank President Obama for that. What did he say? The biggest threat to the freedom of the press in a generation, that would be Barack Obama. Here's a little more from that exchange in 2014, James Risen, clip five.
And they have also engaged in greater secrecy than any past administration. And they have used new technology to try to impose greater control over employees. One of the things that I find chilling is the new program inside the intelligence community called the Insider Threat Program, which is essentially a way to for the intelligence community to monitor all employees with security clearances on a almost constant basis. They're looking for, they say they're looking for anomalies in their behavior, personal behavior. And it's very Orwellian. They think they can monitor anybody. They think that there's no rights to privacy or due process for someone just because they have a security clearance. And they're also encouraging people inside the intelligence community to inform on other coworkers. So it's like a they're creating a police state within the government.
That's a New York Times reporter in 2014 about the Obama administration creating a police state. Where have you heard this before? A police state? Grooming informants, basically. Spies! You tell on your fellow employees, your coworkers. My father in grade again, he said that when Obama became president, well, just to paraphrase something that he said there, he promised to be open and transparent, remember? And yet, look at the fruits. Look at the actions. That's what we want to do here. If we're trying to get to the truth, if we want the truth, then we have to look at the fruits. What are they actually doing? I mean, it's not like words don't matter. And as I say, President Trump is certainly fighting back against the fake news atmosphere. There's no doubt about that. But look at the actions. And I'll, when I get to the end of this program, we'll look more at the actual actions of President Trump. But just to come back to grade again, my father says, do you realize how deadly dangerous this trend of lawlessness is? Very few people do. But it gives insight into the real nature of the threat facing America. This is quickly moving America toward a rule by dictatorship or tyranny. James Risen, I mean, he nearly went to prison for just refusing to reveal his sources. Now, again, there's arguments to be made, I'm sure, on both sides, and there does come a point. If national security is at risk, you can see where the government would have a point. But at the same time, and you factor into this all of the more recent revelations about spying on a political opponent, you can see where corrupt, politically motivated individuals in the deep state, you could see where they would abuse these powers. And what, like I'll play for you later from Cheryl Atkinson, I mean, what is an individual to do if the government comes after you? I mean, think about how costly it would be to fight back. Donald Trump's in a position where he can fight back, at least, against all of the lies and the evil. But just the everyday common American? What happens if they're spied on? What happens if they lose their freedoms? What is it that they can actually even do? Who holds the government accountable? Who holds the deep state accountable? The DOJ? I mean, what if they get it wrong? What if it's unjustified? James Risen is just one, he's just one particular case. There's quite a few others that are just like him. I mean, look, the DOJ went after him for 7 years, trying to get him to break. And he wouldn't, and so they finally did drop the case. Let me just play for you a clip from President Obama. This is, when was this? I forgot to write it down, but I think it was in the middle part or the early part of his first term. But this is clip 6 here. He's talking about the struggle that he had with going after leakers and yet still trying to give the reporters the freedom that they were entitled to under the Constitution. Here's clip 6.
As Commander-in-Chief, I believe we must keep information secret that protects our operations and our people in the field. To do so, we must enforce consequences for those who break the law and breach their commitment to protect classified information. But a free press is also essential for our democracy. That's who we are. And I'm troubled by the possibility that leak investigations may chill the investigative journalism that holds government accountable.
That's interesting comments there, saying that, look, we've got to enforce consequences for those who break the law, for those who leak. This is when the administration was in there. They didn't want people leaking. Okay, leaks today, judging by what Comey said, just casually. Yeah, well, I leaked these to a friend of mine who and told him to give it to the New York Times in the hope that it would trigger a special counsel. I mean, they brag about it now because, well, President Trump's in there. We have to go after the enemy. You see the reasoning. Here's President Obama. He's troubled by the chill, as he said, that these leak investigations, that they might chill the investigative journalism. He's acknowledging there, basically, that because we're going to go aggressively after these reporters, this could put a chill on investigative journalism. And that's what we have to wrestle with here. But on which side did he come down on? Look at the actions. Look at 8 years. Look at the prosecutions. Look at the journalists that he targeted. Look at the example of the AP reporters back in 2012. Obama's DOJ. It just helped itself to 2 months. 2 months of phone records from at least 20 Associated Press employees. That happened in early 2012. And the AP, this is a journalism. This is a journalism source, or rather a company, distributes articles all over the world. And the AP said that what the DOJ did in 2012, that this was serious interference with their constitution. This is quoting them, their constitutional rights to gather and report the news. Listen to how this is reported on. In an article from 2013, it says the AP incident involved the DOJ obtaining 2 months of reporters' phone records, which listed outgoing calls for the work and personal phone numbers of AP journalists and editors. AP said in a report published Monday that it was not clear whether the records also included incoming calls or the duration of the calls, but noted that the, quote, government seized the records for more than 20 separate telephone lines assigned to AP and its journalists in April and May of 2012. They did this without the AP knowing about it at the start, and then they come around to find out about it. 20 separate lines at the Associated Press. This was in 2012. Has Donald Trump ever done this? Has he just taken 2 months of phone records from Reuters, from CNN? The article says here, the DOJ's investigation is thought to be linked to an ongoing criminal investigation that is attempting to track down the source of leaks. You see, they need to know who these reporters are calling, even if it's just getting the numbers. They can find out the names, and then they can find out the leaks. And we've got to track down those leaks. Because after all, I mean, they've got to be prosecuted. George Bush, in the case of James Risen, he takes it to a point, and then along comes President Obama and Eric Holder. And they take it 3, 4, 5 steps farther. This is from an AP article in 2013. It says, typically, phone records obtained by the feds will show date, time, and duration. Well, it just goes to the information and shows why it's so valuable to government snoopers, because they can find out who the sources are that way. The article says there are special rules in place in the United States that authorities are supposed to adhere to when obtaining journalist communications records, and they're intended to protect press freedom and stop prosecutors from compromising journalists' constitutionally protected news-gathering role. Federal regulations instruct investigators that they can obtain journalists' phone records only as a last resort, and the decision to seek the records should receive the express authorization of the Attorney General. In this case, going back to those years, it was Eric Holder. And I mean, he did it. and he did it with great frequency, as these examples bring out. There's more to come. It says it's worth noting that the debacle comes amid an unprecedented wider crackdown on leaks instigated by the Obama administration's DOJ, which has so far prosecuted more whistleblowers under the Espionage Act than all previous administrations combined. I mean, this points out two things. It points out how that before Obama came along, it points out how infrequently the Espionage Act was even used. But then along comes Barack Obama, and he uses this act to go after whistleblowers, and more so than all other previous administrations combined. That's all. It's an unprecedented wider crackdown. Remember all those words from the montage at the beginning? Danger, blocking, treacherous, targets on our backs. We're being assaulted. Here again, we've got to look at the actions. Has President Trump done any of these things? Has he gone after reporters and whistleblowers like this? When we come back, we'll look at the example of the Fox News reporter, James Rosen, also from this around this same time period, 2012, 13, and 14. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
It's like they're creating a police state within the government.
That's the New York Times reporter casually commenting in 2014 about the Obama administration creating a police state within the government. You look at what happened to Fox News reporter James Rosen, not to be confused with James Risen, very similar names, but different reporters working for different companies. Rosen, going back several years ago, he was given information by somebody at the State Department about North Korea, their nuclear weapons program. And Rosen, as reporters do, reported on that. And the Justice Department filed a subpoena to access Rosen's phone and computer records. Here again, without his knowledge, they got to find out who's leaking. They're going to prosecute the leakers. They're not going to tolerate leaking. Not during the Obama years. And did you know that in this subpoena, the Department of Justice called Rosen an aider, abettor, and or co-conspirator? The reporter at Fox News. And here again, they use the Espionage Act from 1917. They use this as justification to go after James Rosen's records. Here he is in March of 2017 explaining to Fox News reporters how the Obama DOJ came after him. This is clip 7.
What happened to me was that the Attorney General, Eric Holder, under Barack Obama as president, secretly designated me a criminal co-conspirator and a flight risk, and thereby had a federal judge give the government permission to rifle through all my Gmails. They could read the emails, and then also to get all the phone records associated with about 20 phones that I used at that time in my reporting. All of those phone lines were 202 or 703, which are the area codes associated with Washington and the Pentagon, Northern Virginia area. One of those 20 phone lines was 718, and that referred to my parents' house on Staten Island at that time.
So they followed every trail they could, even to James Rosen's parents in Staten Island. Of course, what they wanted was, well, who's the leaker at the State Department? Who's the leaker at the Pentagon? Has Donald Trump ever done this with Jim Acosta? Has he secretively gathered the phone records of CNN's Jim Acosta and secretively labeled him an aider and abettor, a co-conspirator? I mean, he's had some fiery tweets about Jim Acosta's reporting. He doesn't like it. He says it's fake. But has he done this? Has he done what Obama's DOJ did to James Rosen several years ago, 2013, 2014. Here he is again in that same interview. This is clip 8.
The Obama administration had launched an investigation to determine my sourcing for a series of reports I did on that time from the State Department about North Korea's nuclear weapons program.
That's him and the Fox News report from last year. And then one final one here, the same interview, clip 9.
The surveillance extended, for example, to monitoring my whereabouts and my use of the swipe badge that I had as a member of the State Department press corps, when I was leaving the building, where I was using telephones and so forth. And that was attributed to Eric Holder, who later told the Washington Post that it was the greatest regret of his tenure. And that, by all accounts, this was illegal and unprecedented. Not even Neil Sheehan, who was the New York Times reporter back in 1971, who published the Pentagon Papers, 7,000 classified documents, was designated by the Nixon administration as a criminal co-conspirator in a violation of the Espionage Act. So that was an honor that I had all unto myself.
Worse than during the Nixon era. Worse. More treacherous. Risen says the worst in a generation. It's pretty amazing. And here again, when they come out, those that are found to be exposing this, or rather those that are exposed, like Eric Holder, then they come out and say, well, yeah, I regret doing that. Well, today they don't even do that. They just say, well, I didn't do it. I still maintain that I was right and you're wrong. You go back to, speaking of Eric Holder, in this clip we have here from, this is May of 2013, and here he is testifying under oath before the House Judiciary Committee, and he was asked about prosecuting reporters, about using the Espionage Act of 1917, and in clip 10, here's what he said.
Well, I would say this. With regard to the potential prosecution of the press for the disclosure of material, that is not something that I've ever been involved in, heard of, or would think would be a wise policy. In fact, my view is quite the opposite, that what I proposed during my confirmation, what the Obama administration supported during 2009, and I understand, I think Senator Schumer is now introducing a bill that we are going to support as well, that the press should be a shield law with regard to the press's ability to gather information and to disseminate it. The focus should be on those people who break their oaths and put the American people at risk, not reporters who gather this information. That should not be the focus of these investigations.
That's Eric Holder's testimony in 2013, saying that there should be some kind of a shield law to protect the reporters, when really what we're interested in getting here is the leakers, We want to find out who the leakers are. But I don't think James Rosen can say that he was shielded from, as he said in that previous quote, actions that were not only unprecedented, they were illegal. They were illegal. Pulling all of that information. I mean, when Eric Holder gave that testimony, he had already signed the search warrant to go after James Rosen's records. And then, you know, soon after that testimony, the news broke, and the same with the AP reporters. Oh, you're spying on the AP reporters as well. So when they come along later and say, well, I really regret that. Well, he's saying that because he got caught. Cheryl Atkinson. I mean, this example's chilling, really. She was targeted for, again, basically for writing stories that made the Obama administration look pretty bad. Going back to the Fast and Furious case early on, the scandal, to use the word that should be used when you refer to Fast and Furious. She exposed a lot of the nefarious activity there. And then again with Benghazi in 2012. And listen to her story. This is what she had to say on Fox News in September of 2017, just a few months ago. This is clip 11.
Well, mine began before we heard about what the government had done to Associated Press and Fox News, before Edward Snowden. I had intel sources come to me and suggest that I was likely being monitored by the intel community or by certain actors in the Obama administration because of the stories I was doing. Long story short, some people in the intel community helped me because they thought this was so egregious. Had forensics done on my computers, multiple computers from CBS and my personal computers. And three independent exams have seen and proven forensics that they used government proprietary software to monitor my keystrokes, planted confidential classified documents in my computer, watched much of what I was doing, exfiltrated files, listened in on my audio. We have dates, times, and methods for a lot of this, as well as government-owned IP addresses found in my computer.
And the only reason that she found out this information is because she had help from some on the inside, as she explained there, who knew what was going on was so egregious. These were whistleblowers or leakers working in the opposite direction. All right, you see the ones today, they're celebrated. Jim Comey, Clapper, McCabe, and so on. Well, we have to get this information out. I mean, the reporters need this information. You have the private briefing between Comey and the president, January 6th, 2017. Then three days later, it's on CNN, thanks to McCabe and Clapper. And people don't think anything of it. But now, in this case, this was just because of the stories that she was producing. This is because of what she was writing about regarding Fast and Furious and later Benghazi. And the Obama DOJ or NSA or whatever intel agency it was, here's this massive agency using the government's intelligence tools to spy on Cheryl Atkinson. She's put together a timeline, by the way, at her website, the Obama era surveillance timeline, she calls it. And her story factors into this. She says from February 2011, after receiving an anonymous tip, CBS investigative correspondent Cheryl Atkinson begins researching the Department of Justice gunwalking operation nickname Fast and Furious, that secretly let thousands of weapons be trafficked to Mexican drug cartels. Moving ahead in the timeline, February 22nd, 2011, CBS's Atkinson breaks news about Fast and Furious on the CBS Evening News. After the story airs, the government issues an internal memo that seeks to push positive stories to contradict the news. The news that was breaking, that Cheryl Atkinson was breaking. March 4th, same year, CBS News Atkinson exclusively interviews sitting ATF special agent John Dotson. He gives firsthand account contradicting government denials regarding Fast and Furious. And then later that year, she says, October 3rd, 2011. Listen to this. Obama administration secretly changes longstanding policy. The change creates a loophole that Senator Ron Wyden would later say allows the NSA to conduct backdoor searches of incidental collection of U.S. citizens, domestic communications. It says the same day CBS News airs Atkinson's report on newly uncovered memos that contradict Attorney General Eric Holder's denials about Fast and Furious. So right at this time where she's blowing the whistle about Fast and Furious, the Obama administration secretly changes a long-standing policy and makes it possible. This is according to Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat. This story, by the way, it was reported on in the Guardian. Here's another one that didn't get much attention at all. Not during the Obama years. I mean, this report from the Guardian, this isn't nearly as important as a provocative tweet from Donald Trump. This is from 2013 about this NSA loophole. The Guardian reports the National Security Agency has a secret backdoor into its vast databases under a legal authority enabling it to search for U.S. citizens' email and phone calls without a warrant, according to a top secret document passed to The Guardian by Edward Snowden. Snowden was a whistleblower, and he had to flee the country to escape prosecution. And when you look at some of the things he was blowing the whistle on, it's no wonder. It's no wonder he was sounding the alarm. And added to that, it's no wonder the Obama administration went hard after whistleblowers, because the whistleblowers were exposing them. They were exposing these loopholes. This was done secretively by the Obama administration, and no one would know about it to this day were it not for these documents that Snowden leaked. The Guardian says the previously undisclosed rule or rule change allows NSA operatives to hunt for individual Americans' communications using their names or other identifying information. Senator Ron Wyden told The Guardian that the law provides the NSA with a loophole, potentially allowing warrantless searches for the phone calls or emails of law-abiding Americans. That's from Senator Wyden. Remember him? We've talked about him before on the program. He was the one who asked James Clapper right around the same time. It was earlier in that year, actually, March or April of 2013. He asked James Clapper point blank, are you collecting all this metadata on millions and millions and millions of Americans? This is clip 13.
Does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
It does not.
Not wittingly.
Now, if you know the backstory there, Senator Wyden, a Democrat, he gave James Clapper that question in advance. He had it a day or two in advance. They asked about this data that was being collected. The NSA was collecting it. Clapper lied under oath. He was given his testimony after the fact and an opportunity to amend it, and he did not do that. And then Snowden, 2-3 months later, he blows the whistle. Well, they actually are collecting all that data. And then here's how James Clapper explained this after the fact. This also is from 2013, but it's after the Snowden files were revealed. Clip 14 here.
I have great respect for Senator Wyden. I thought, though, in retrospect, I was asked, when are you going to stop beating your wife kind of question, which is meaning not answerable necessarily by a simple yes or no. So I responded in what I thought was the most truthful or least untruthful manner by saying no.
That's what he said about the question. It was a gotcha question. It was unfair. It was not answerable. So I gave the most truthful or least untruthful answer that there was. That's what he says about the question that he got in advance. And then, as you might remember, we played this for you last week. Here's how James Clapper remembers it today. This question that Senator Wyden gave him back in 2013, and then all that happened thereafter. This is clip 15.
What that stems from is an exchange I had with Senator Wyden 5 years ago in March of 2013 about a surveillance program, and he was asking me about one, and I was thinking about another. So I made a mistake. But I didn't lie, so that's what occasioned...
So what you're referencing, though, is that when you said, when you were talking about James Snowden blowing the whistle on the NSA illegally spying, and in 2013 when you were asked about it, you said no. So that is a lie. And
isn't a lie. I'm sorry. Okay. It isn't a lie. I was thinking about something else.
Now, that's how he explains it today. It wasn't a lie. Actually, I gave a truthful testimony. He admitted after the fact in 2013 that it was erroneous. I don't think he said it was a lie. But now he says, no, it's not a lie at all. I mean, I was thinking about something else. I mean, I just spoke the truth, actually. If it's anyone's fault, it's Senator Wyden's. The Guardian, continuing on from all these revelations in 2013, it says the authority, this is talking about when the Obama administration secretively changed this ruling or this policy, this long-standing policy, creating this loophole. The Guardian knows about it in 2013 thanks to Edward Snowden, but it says here the authority, approved in 2011, appears to contrast with repeated assurances from Barack Obama and senior intelligence officials to both Congress and the American public that the privacy of U.S. citizens is protected from the NSA's dragnet surveillance programs. You see that they're caught red-handed doing all these things, but then they just come out and say, you know, we're not spying. Or if it is found out that they were spying, well, it's not a spy though, but it's an informant, as they argue over semantics. All this is going on. All this is being revealed in 2013. Clapper denying it, then it comes out, Snowden's revelations, then The Guardian writing about this loophole. And here is President Obama that same year. This is in Stockholm, Sweden. This is what he said in September 2013, clip 12.
What I can say with confidence is that when it comes to our domestic operations, the concerns that people have back home in the United States of America, that we do not surveil the American people or persons within the United States, that there are a lot of checks and balances in place designed to avoid a surveillance state.
Well, not according to James Risen, James Rosen, Cheryl Atkinson, 20 reporters at the AP. And on it goes. This timeline, this Cheryl Atkinson timeline about the Obama-era surveillance. Moving forward, February 13, 2012, it says at approximately 10:30 p.m., remote intruders secretly download new spy software proprietary to a federal agency onto Atkinson's CBS work computer. This happened in 2012. Later that year, October 2012, CBS begins airing Atkinson's Benghazi stories, which rely on whistleblowers and numerous government-linked confidential sources. Remember, the Obama administration lied about Benghazi. They sent out Susan Rice, they sent out Hillary Clinton, and they all said, it's the video. Nothing to look at here, just a spontaneous demonstration that went bad, that's all. Well, Atkinson was telling the truth, and it was based on these whistleblowers inside of the government. December 2012, two intelligence-connected sources separately suggest to Atkinson that she's likely under government surveillance due to her reporting. Due to her reporting. That's it. Not because they needed a leaker. Well, they probably were going after whoever was leaking, too. But here they were spying on Cheryl Atkinson. It says one source tells the government, tells her the government has pushed the envelope like never before, and that the public would be shocked to learn the extent that the government is conducting surveillance of private citizens. So she gets some help. She's not wealthy enough to do this on her own. She gets some help inside of the deep state. These are people who are seeing what's going on, who are helping her. Look, they are surveilling you. They are spying on you. And on August 7th, 2013, CBS News, CBS, publicly announces confirmation of Atkinson's computer intrusions. It's true. I've been hacked. This is from CBS's report. Atkinson's computer was accessed by an unauthorized, external, unknown party on multiple occasions in late 2012. This party also used sophisticated methods to remove all possible indications of unauthorized activity and alter system times to cause further confusion. And as an investigation later pointed out, these were coming from government, inside of the federal government. Well, there's more. If you can believe it, there's more. There's more to the timeline. There's more clips. There's more from Cheryl Atkinson explaining all of this. But we're just out of time. I'll have to come back to this perhaps on tomorrow's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.